Chapter 5. Treachery is its own reward. Calidus Temple Proverb. One thing I'll say for the Tao, they certainly know how to make an impressive entrance. Shui Sasai was draped in a simple white robe, which made all the imperial dignitaries look ridiculously overdressed, and was surrounded by others of his kind similarly attired. There was no mistaking who was in charge, though, as his charisma filled the room, his entourage bobbing in his wake as he strode confidently across the polished wooden floor towards Grice, like seabirds around a fishing boat. I didn't realise at the time how apt the mental image was, of course.
The ambassador, like all Tao diplomats, would be one of the water caste.
What I did notice, almost at once, was the bluish cast of his skin, and that of his compatriots, which I'd been led to expect from Divas's gossip and the various reports I'd read. What I hadn't expected was the single braid that grew from his otherwise hairless skull, plaited and ornamented with ribbons in a variety of colours which contrasted vividly with the plain simplicity of his garment. The meaning of the bizarre hairstyle sported by their human dupes, which I'd noted many times since our landing, thus became clear to me, along with the face paint the leader of the street gang had worn, and I found myself suppressing a shiver of unease. If so many citizens had been influenced so openly by these alien interlopers, the situation was dire indeed, and my chances of keeping well away from trouble problematic at best. It reminded me of something else, too, and after a moment I recalled the decoration Gorok the Croot had applied to the quills on his head. Clearly the races of the Tao Empire saw nothing wrong in absorbing the mores and fashions of one another's cultures, eroding their very identities in the name of their union. A notion any loyal imperial citizen would have regarded with as much horror as I did. I'd seen at first hand what happened when traitors and heretics abandoned their humanity to follow the twisted teachings of chaos, and the thought of how fertile a soil the warp-spawned abominations would find the Imperium if it were ever to become as unwittingly open to alien influence as the Tau and their dupes chilled my very soul. Shui Sasai's flunkies also had their single tail of hair ornamented, though slightly less flamboyantly, and I found myself wondering if the pattern denoted some subtle graduations of status among them, or were merely intended to be decorative. "Smug little Groxfondler." Denali was at my elbow again, the words delivered through almost motionless lips as he made brief eye contact with the Xeno and raised his wine glass in greeting. "He thinks he's got the whole planet sewn up." "And does he?" I asked, more out of politeness than actually expecting an answer. "Not yet." Denali watched as the Xeno delegation made its ritual greeting to Grice. "But he's certainly got the governor in his pocket." "Are you sure about that?" I asked. Denali must have detected something in my intonation because his attention switched to me at once, a sensation I found mildly disconcerting. "You suspect he might be under other influences?" he suggested, watching my face for a flicker of reaction. "Well, good luck to him. A lifetime of dissembling had left me virtually impossible to read in that way." I indicated Aurelius with a tilt of my head. He was watching the exchange between Grice and the Tau diplomat warily, trying not to look as though he was paying it any attention. "Our rogue trader friend had quite a conversation with His Excellency earlier this evening," I said, "and neither of them seemed terribly happy about it." "You've spoken to Aurelius?" Once again, I found myself in the middle of a verbal fencing match. "Emperor's bowels," I thought irritably. "Doesn't anyone around here ever say what they mean?" "We exchanged a few words," I said, shrugging. "He seems to think the shooting's about to start." The bark of a bolt pistol going off echoed around the ballroom, and I dived for cover behind an overstuffed sofa even before the rational part of my mind had identified the source of the sound. I may not be a paragon of virtue, but I like to think my survival instincts more than makes up for any moral shortcomings I might possess. Donali stood, gaping, as the room erupted into panic and screams. Half the guests started running in no particular direction, while the others stared around themselves in half-witted stupefaction. Priceless crystal goblets shattered underfoot as drinks were dropped and swords were unsheathed, and every kind of sidearm imaginable suddenly appeared in hands on every side. "Treachery!" one of the Tau shrieked, glaring around itself and drawing some kind of handgun from the recesses of its robes. Shuisa's eye was down, thick purple blood everywhere, and I knew from experience that he wouldn't be getting up again. The bolter round had exploded inside his chest cavity, redecorating the immediate vicinity with Tau viscera, which I was mildly intrigued to note was darker in colour than the human equivalent. Something to do with the colour of their skin, I assumed.
The Tau equivalent to hemoglobin contains cobalt, rather than iron, so their blood and viscera vary from dark blue to purple, depending on the degree of oxygenation. Don't even get me started about the smell.
Castine! I activated the combeat in my ear. Where are you? Over by the stage. I lifted my head, scanning the room, and located her as she scrambled up next to Amberlee, who was gazing at the crowd as though mesmerised. Did you see where the shot came from? No. She hesitated a fraction of a second. My attention was elsewhere. Sorry, Commissar.
No need to be, I said. You weren't to know this was going to turn into a war zone? In truth, that looked uncomfortably like what was happening.
Practically everyone with a ceremonial sidearm had drawn it in a panic-stricken reflex, except for Castine and myself, and was looking for someone to use it on, which meant identifying the assassin would be virtually impossible by now.
Quela, animals! Is this how you respond to proposals of peace?
The gun-waving Tau was getting hysterical, swinging the weapon wildly. It was only a matter of seconds, I thought, before he pulled the trigger, or more likely someone else shot him before he had the chance. Either way, it was going to start a massacre, and I had no intention of getting caught in the middle of it. Lustig, I voxed. Jürgen, we're leaving now. There may be resistance.
Sir,
Jürgen's voice was as phlegmatic as ever.
Commissar?
Lustig's was inflected with a query he was too well trained to ask, but I wasn't about to let the honour guard blunder into a firefight without warning. I was going to need them if I expected to get out of here. The Tau ambassador has just been assassinated, I said. Then I cursed my own stupidity. The channel wasn't secured, which meant every listening post on both sides had probably picked up my transmission. Oh well, too late to worry about that now. My main priority was getting the hell out of here in one piece. Unfortunately, that meant getting past the Tau delegation, which looked like it was becoming a fire magnet for every Imperial hothead in the room. There was only one thing for it. With a curious sense of déjà vu, I strode forwards, my hands held out from my sides, away from my weapons. Please bear in mind that barely a minute had passed by this time, and the room was far from silent. Practically everyone was shouting at everyone else, and no one was listening. The rest of the Tau were babbling away in their own language. It sounded like frying grok steaks to me, but the gist of it was obviously, put that bloody thing away before you get us all shot. And the other guests were screaming, drop it, at him and each other. I realised that with the tangle of competing factions and interests in the room, there would be a complete bloodbath the moment anyone pulled a trigger, which was probably what the assassin was counting on to cover his tracks. Colonel, with me. Castine could cover my back, at least. I saw her slip off the stage and start towards me through the milling mob. Amberlee had already disappeared. Sensible girl.
You did this!
The Tau struck the muzzle of his curiously featureless pistol under Grice's chin. The governor seemed to lose even more colour, if that were possible, and spluttered incoherently.
That's ridiculous! What would I have to gain? More lies!
The Tau shrugged off the restraining hands of his colleagues.
The truth, or you die!
This does not advance the greater good, I said, echoing the words of the Kroot.
I wasn't quite sure what they meant, but I hoped they had more resonance for the Tau than yet another variation on put it down before I shoot you, which didn't seem to be having much effect. It worked better than I dared to hope. Every Tau in the group, including the maniac with the gun, stared at me with something I took to be astonishment. Their faces are harder to read than human or Eldar, but it gets easier the more practice you have, and these days I can usually catch even the most carefully concealed half-truth.
What the frack's that supposed to mean?
Castine sub-vocalised into my combeed, breaking through the crowd to stand beside me. I noticed with a flicker of relief that she still hadn't drawn her weapons either, which was going to make things a lot easier.
Warped if I know, I responded, before stepping forward to where the Xenos could get a better look at me.
What do you know of the greater good?
The Tau asked, lowering his weapon a fraction, but keeping Grice covered nevertheless. His companions hesitated, clearly wondering if it was safe to disarm him yet. Grice obviously thought otherwise, sweating more profusely than Jürgen reading a porno slate. Not much, I admitted. But adding more deaths to tonight's piece of treachery won't help anyone, surely.
Your words have merit, Imperial officer,
one of the other Tau spoke up cautiously, an eye on his gun-toting friend.
My name is Kane, I said,
and a whisper of voices around me echoed it. That's him. That's Caiaphas Kane. The reaction seemed to bemuse my new friend.
You are well known to these people?
I seem to have acquired something of a reputation, I admitted.
Commissar Kane is well known as a man of integrity, a new voice cut in.
Aurelius was edging his way through the crowd, flanked by his bodyguards. At a gesture from him, they holstered their bolt pistols.
That's right, Donali backed him up, taking the initiative back into official hands. You can trust his word.
Which didn't say much for his skills as a diplomat, when you come to think of it, but then he didn't know me as well as I do.
I am El Sorath,
the conversational Tau said, extending a hand in human fashion. I took it, finding it slightly warmer than I'd expected. Something to do with the blue skin, probably.
Did your friend...
I indicated the Tau with the gun.
El Hassai,
El Sorath supplied helpfully.
Did anyone actually see who fired the shot? I asked, directing the question to El Hassai personally, as though we were simply having a normal conversation. A flicker of doubt passed across his features for the first time.
We were talking to this one.
The gun came up to point at Grice again.
I heard Shui Sasai say, "What?" and then the sound of the shot. When I turned back, there was no one else there. It must have been him.
But you didn't actually see the murder, I persisted.
El Hassai shook his head, a gesture I assumed he'd learned from his long association with humans.
It could have been no one else, he insisted.
Did you see the governor with a gun?
He must have concealed it.
True, Grice's overly ornamented robes might have concealed almost anything in their voluminous folds, but I tried to picture this indolent lump of lard drawing a pistol, killing the ambassador and palming it again within a matter of seconds and fought to keep a smile off my face.
There are hundreds of people in this room, I said calmly. Isn't it more likely that one of them is responsible? Maybe a servant you simply didn't notice?
Vastly more likely,
El Sorath agreed, holding out a hand for the pistol. After a moment, El Hassai capitulated and handed it to him. A collective sigh of relief echoed round the room behind us.
This will be investigated, Donali said, and the murderer brought to account. You have my word. We are aware of the value of Imperial promises,
El Sorath said, with the barest trace of sarcasm.
But we will make our own inquiries.
Of course.
Grice wiped his face with the sleeve of his robe, quivering like a plasmoid and failing to recover a shred of dignity.
Our Arbites will keep you apprised of everything we're able to uncover.
I would expect nothing less,
El Sorath said. We're in position, Commissar, Lustig said in my ear. Castine and I exchanged glances.
What's it like out there? She sub-vocalised.
Panic and confusion, ma'am. And there seems to be something going on in the city.
Perhaps you'd better return to your compound,
Donali suggested to El Sorath, unaware of the ominous messages we'd been getting.
My driver
wouldn't get 50 metres from the gate, Castine put in. I switched frequencies to the tactical net, as I was sure she had, and heard a confused babble of voices in my ear. PDF units were mobilising in support of Arbites riot squads, and unrest was spreading across the city like jam across toast.
What do you mean?
Grice quivered, looking around for a flunky to blame. Palace security troops were finally beginning to deploy, guarding the exits, although I didn't expect much from them if they actually had to defend the place. Lots of ceremonial gold armour, which wouldn't stop a thrown rock, and old-fashioned lasguns with the ridiculously long barrels I'd only seen before in museums, and which probably hadn't been fired in the last couple of millennia.
There are riots breaking out all over the city, Your Excellency.
Castine almost sounded as though she was enjoying breaking the bad news to him.
Mobs are attacking the Arbites sector houses and the PDF barracks, denouncing the Imperium for the ambassador's murder.
How could they know?
Grice blustered. The news hasn't had time to spread. For a moment, I wondered if my ill-timed transmission to Lustig had been the cause of all this. Then common sense reasserted itself. There hadn't been time to disseminate the information, even if someone had been listening. There was only one possible explanation. A conspiracy, I said. The murderer had confederates who were spreading the rumour even before he struck. This wasn't just meant to disrupt the negotiations. It was supposed to signal a full-scale revolt.
More lies!
El-Hassai had been quiet for the last few minutes, staring at the ambassador's corpse as though he expected it to sit up and start giving us the answers.
You think we sacrifice one of our own to seize control here?
I think nothing, I said carefully. I'm just a soldier. But someone's orchestrating this. Emperor knows why. If it's not your people, then maybe it's some imperial faction trying to smoke out your supporters here.
But who would consider such a thing? Grice burbled.
I glanced at Aurelius, my suspicions about him flooding back. The Inquisition was certainly ruthless enough, and had the resources to do it. That's for wiser heads than mine to determine, I said, and for a moment the rogue trader's gimlet eyes were on me.
Our prime concern must be the welfare of your delegation, Donnelly insisted. Can we get a skimmer into the grounds?
We can try. Elsarath was keeping it together, at least. He produced some sort of voxcaster from the recesses of his robe and hissed and sighed a message into it. Whatever the response was, it seemed to satisfy him and calm the others. Even El-Hassai seemed a little less jumpy.
An air car has been dispatched, he said, tucking the vox away. It will be with us shortly.
And in the meantime, my guards will ensure your personal safety, Grice said, beckoning a few forward.
The Tau looked dubious at this.
They were signally unable to do so in the case of Oran Shui Sasai,
El-Sarath pointed out mildly. Grice flushed a darker shade of grey.
If anyone has a better suggestion, I'd be delighted to hear it, he snapped,
grabbing a large glass of Amasek from one of the servitors, which continued to circle the room, oblivious to all the commotion.
I believe the Commissar arrived with an honour guard, Aurelius said. Surely a man of his reputation can be trusted with so delicate a task?
Thanks a lot, I thought. But with that reputation at stake, all I could do was mutter something about it being an honour I didn't deserve, which was perfectly true, of course. Donnelly and the Tau were all for it once the idea had sunk in, so I found myself leading a small gaggle of Xenos and diplomats out of the hall and into the open air. Lustig and the others came pounding up as we emerged, lasguns primed, and took up station around us.
Be on your guard, Castine warned them. The assassin's still at large, so trust no one apart from us.
Especially the diplomats, I added. Donnelly shot me a sharp look, and I smiled to pretend I was joking. I don't like it here, I said quietly to Castine. It's too exposed. She nodded agreement. What do you suggest?
There's a shrubbery over that way, I pointed,
blessing the instinctive paranoia that had had me looking out for bolt holes on our drive in. It'll give us some cover at least. It was also out of the pool of light surrounding the house, less exposed to prying eyes and sensor equipment. So we scurried over to it, the troopers double-timing and the Tau keeping up with remarkable ease. Donnelly kept up with difficulty, but managed to converse with El-Sarath the whole way, slipping between platitudes in Imperial Gothic and the sibilant Tau tongue for what I assumed to be remarks too sensitive for the likes of us. Not that I had had the time to eavesdrop on their conversation, even if I'd had the inclination. Vox traffic on the tactical band was getting more urgent, the situation deteriorating rapidly. The governor's declared a state of martial law, I relayed to Donnelly, who took the news remarkably well, only kicking two ornamental bushes to pieces before calming down enough to respond verbally.
He would, cretin.
I take it you don't think that will be helpful, I commented dryly.
It's about as helpful as putting a fire out with promethium, he said.
Even I understood the logic of that. The riots on their own were bad enough, but putting several thousand PDF troopers like the ones I'd encountered in the Eagle's Wing onto the streets, itching for an excuse to bust heads, was just asking for trouble. And that was assuming none of them were secretly Xenoist sympathisers. So long as none of the PDF trolls take it into their heads to attack the Tau,
I began, then trailed off, unwilling to complete the thought. The notion of the aliens being forced to defend themselves, unleashing the war gear Divas had enthusiastically described to me, was truly horrifying. Because if that happened, it was credits to Carrots we'd be mobilised to stop them. And aside from my natural desire to keep as far away from the killing zone as possible, I was by no means sure that we could. "Our enclave is surrounded by agitated citizens," Elsereth announced after another brief and incomprehensible conversation on his own vox. "But overt hostilities have not yet occurred." Well, thank the Emperor for small mercies, I thought, and stepped aside to talk to Castine, who was still monitoring the tactical net. "There's a mob of rioters heading this way," she said, "and a PDF platoon with orders to secure the palace grounds. When they get here, it'll be bloody." I listened to the traffic myself for a few moments, overlaying the sit-reps with my still somewhat hazy mental map of the city. If I was right, we had barely 10 minutes before the slaughter began. "Then let's make sure we're somewhere else," I said. "As soon as our little blue friends are airborne, we're leaving." "Commissar?" Castine was looking at me a little curiously. "Shouldn't we stay to help? Help a bunch of gold-plated Nancy boys hold a virtually indefensible fixed position against a mob of blood-maddened lunatics? Not if I had anything to do with it." But I needed to put it a little more tactfully than that, of course. "I appreciate the sentiment, Colonel," I said, "but I suspect it would be very unwise politically." I turned to Denali for support, unexpectedly pleased that the diplomat had hung around. "Unless I'm misreading the situation, of course." "I don't think you are," he said, clearly reluctant to agree with me. "In his position, I wouldn't be too happy to see the only competent soldiers in the vicinity moving rapidly away either. At the moment, this is still an internal Gravalaxian matter. Whereas if we get involved, we run the risk of bringing the rest of the guard in behind us," I finished, "which would be just as destabilising as a Tau incursion." "I see." Castine's face fell, and I suddenly realised that she'd been hoping for a chance to prove herself and her regiment. I smiled at her encouragingly. "Cheer up, Colonel," I said. "The Emperor has a galaxy full of enemies. I'm sure we can find one more worthy of us than a rock-throwing rabble." "I'm sure you're right," she said, though still with a faint air of disappointment. Well, she'd just have to get over it. I switched channels again. "Jürgen, get over here now," I voxed. "We're going to have to leave in a hurry." "On my way, sir." The growl of an engine preceded him, the large military truck ploughing parallel gouges in the immaculate lawn that would take generations of gardeners to completely erase. He swung it to a halt beside us with his usual disdain for the conventional use of brakes and gears. "Good man," I waved to my malodorous aide, who popped the cab doors but kept the engine running. Time began to drag now. Lustig had fanned the troopers out into a textbook defensive pattern, making good use of the available cover, and I could see that the two fire teams had set up in mutually supporting positions, as Castine had intended. They looked tight and disciplined, their minds on the job, and with no trace of the old rancor I'd have feared would surface the first time any of our troopers found themselves in combat together. Of course, they still had to face that ultimate test, but this was far more than an exercise. And they were still responding well. I began to feel reasonably confident about getting back to our staging area in one piece with them to hide behind. "Listen," Castine tilted her head. I strained to hear over the thrum of our truck's idling engine, but failed to hear anything else for a moment. But then I could distinguish it. The faint susurration of a null-grav flyer approaching at speed, the humming of its ducted fans quite different from the powerful roar of an Astartes speeder or an Eldar jet bike. It was the first time I'd ever encountered Tau techno-sorcery at first hand, and its quiet efficiency was subtly unnerving. "There," Denali pointed, his outstretched finger tracking the curved metal hull as it swept over us and swung around to align itself on the headlights of our truck. I breathed a quiet word of thanks to the Emperor, even though I was sure he wouldn't be listening, and turned to Elsereth. "Bring them in," I said, and watched while Lustig's troopers moved quickly and smoothly to cover the area of lawn next to us. "It looks safe enough." "One day, I'm going to learn not to say things like that. No sooner had the words left my lips and the Tau diplomat raised his vox to contact the pilot than a streak of light rose from the streets beyond the perimeter wall.
"Holy Emperor!" Castine breathed, and I spat out something considerably less polite. I snatched the smooth plastic box from an astonished Elsarath.
"Evade!"
I screamed, not even sure if the pilot spoke Gothic. Within seconds, it was academic anyway. The missile impacted on the underside of the vehicle, punching through the thin metal plating and exploded in a vivid orange fireball. Flaming debris began to patter down around us, but the burning wreck of the fuselage carried on moving, trailing down to impact harmlessly on one of the wings of the palace. As it struck, tearing through the walls, it set off a secondary explosion, probably the fuel or the power cells. The noise was incredible, making us flinch almost as though it were a physical thing, and I was blinking the afterimages clear of my retina for some moments to follow.
"What happened?"
Donnelly stared in bewilderment as screaming figures erupted from what was left of the palace.
"More Gwela treachery!"
El Hasai screamed, glaring around as though he expected us to turn on him any second now. To tell the truth, it was getting more and more tempting every time he opened his mouth, but that wasn't going to get my skin out of here intact. My best chance of doing that depended on keeping Donnelly in the Xenos suite. "I'm inclined to agree," I said, shutting him up through sheer astonishment. "It seems our assassin is Confederates in the PDF."
"How can you be sure?"
Donnelly asked, clearly not wanting to believe it.
"That was a crack missile," Castine explained. "We're the only guard unit in the city, and we didn't fire it. Who else does that leave?"
"Well, too many possibilities for my liking, but there wasn't time to go into that now. I cut into the tactical net using my commissarial override code.
"Crack missile fired in the vicinity of the governor's palace," I snapped. "Who's responsible?"
"I'm sorry, Commissar, that information isn't available."
"Then find out and have the brainless fracker shot!"
I was suddenly aware that my voice had risen. Castine, Donnelly, and the little group of Tau were staring at me, their faces flickering yellow in the light of the burning palace. I hesitated, more considered courses of action beginning to suggest themselves.
"No, wait,"
I corrected myself, to the evident relief of the unseen vox operator.
"Have everyone in that squad arrested and held for interrogation."
I bounced off Denali's questioning look.
"We don't know yet if it was someone panicking, a deliberate attack on the surviving Tau, or just sheer stupidity," I explained. "But if it was an attempt to finish what the assassin started, it might lead us to the conspirators."
"If you are able to identify the assailants,"
Elsarath nodded, the human gesture strangely unsettling.
"If it is a conspiracy, they'll have covered their tracks,"
Donnelly predicted gloomily. "But I suppose it's worth a try."
"What I don't understand," Castine said, frowning, "is why they didn't wait until the air car took off again. Surely if they wanted to kill the other Tau, downing it on the run-in was pointless."
"No, Colonel."
It was exactly the point.
Sudden realization hit me like a punch to the gut. One thing to be said for being paranoid is that sometimes you begin to see patterns no one else can. Killing the ambassador was meant to make them run. The mobs in the streets were meant to leave them with nowhere to go. They're supposed to have only one option now.
"Call in their military to extract them," she nodded, following my chain of reasoning. Donnelly put the last link in place.
"Bringing them into direct conflict with Imperial forces. The one thing we can't allow to happen if we're to have any hope of avoiding a full-scale war over this miserable mudball."
"Then we must die,"
Elsarath said, as though he'd been suggesting a stroll through the park.
"The greater good demands it."
His companions looked sober, but none of them argued.
"No, Donnelly did, though.
He wasn't about to have any little blue martyrs offing themselves on his watch. It demands that you live to continue the negotiations in good faith."
"That would be preferable," Elsarath said.
I was beginning to suspect that the Tau had a sense of humour,
but I see no way to effect so desirable an outcome.
"Colonel, Commissar,"
Donnelly looked at Castine and me a moment after a sudden sinking feeling in my gut warned me that this was about to happen.
"You have a vehicle and a squad of soldiers. Will you try and get these people home?"
For a moment I struggled with the idea of the Xenos as people. I suppose Donnelly's diplomatic training made him think a little differently from the rest of us, but I couldn't think of an excuse to refuse, try as I might.
"Going Xeno, as it's colloquially known, is an occupational hazard among diplomats who spend a lot of time in contact with an alien culture. The prolonged immersion in a foreign mindset sometimes leads them to identify closely with the beings they're negotiating with. In this case, however, it seems clear that Donnelly was just being polite.
Not just for the good of the planet, for the Emperor himself. Well, I'd pulled that one on enough people in my time to be aware of the irony, but it was an appeal I couldn't turn my back on without sacrificing my hard-won reputation. And even though I'd be the first to admit it's completely undeserved, it's proven its worth to me far too often to be casually discarded. Besides, however unhealthy trying to smuggle a truckful of Xenos through a city in flames was likely to be, staying here to be caught in the crossfire between rioters and the PDF looked like being a whole lot worse. So I smiled my best heroic smile and nodded. "Of course," I said. "You can count on us."